This is the Freshman 15.
I'm Daniel Long, and Jeremy, I don't know if you know this about me, but most nights I go outside and I sing a song to the goddess Moon Mother.
I didn't know that.
You didn't?
Could you hum a few bars?
Oh, Moon Mother. It's amazing to me.
Yeah, man. And I'm Jeremy Bear, and I could stand to lose a few pounds, but it's probably fine. My body, my choice.
Well, let's do this.
Let's do it.
I'm ready. Jeremy, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
Let's make it happen.
Now, when you have your baby, what would you like to have? Would you like to have a little boy or a little girl?
What do you mean?
Well, we're just talking here. Let's say you decided to have the child. Would you like it to be a little boy like this one?
Maybe a girl.
A girl. Yes. And what are we going to name this little pumpkin? Are we going to call it Mary or Sally or Susie or...
Tanya.
Tanya!
Baby Tanya.
But I can't have a baby right now. I don't want another baby. Oh, man, you don't understand. I'm in a really bad, bad situation right now. I mean bad.
We know it's hard, Ruth. Very hard. But you have to face reality. If you feel as though you can't raise Tanya, we can put you on to an excellent adoption agency.
Yes.
What's the matter? Are you fucking people deaf? I said I want an abortion!
All right, Daniel, I don't do this a lot on the show.
Okay. Wait, what are you going to do?
I want to start this thing. I want to run a pitch by you. I've been thinking about it. I think this is $1 million, but I want to get your input.
All right. I'm ready. I'm listening.
Here's the pitch. I want to make a movie. I'd love it if you were involved. You don't have to be, but I've got a rock solid idea.
You know I'm in.
Okay. All right. That's all I needed to hear. So this is what I want to do. Obviously, I've directed some stuff, but I haven't done a feature, and I want my first feature to just be like a blow impact. I've been told like I'm a funny guy. I think first time out, I should do a comedy.
That's true.
I want to go big. I want to go broad. I want to make people laugh. I want to pick a topic that's just going to be hilarious, and I think I found it. You ready?
I'm ready.
Abortion. I want to make the abortion comedy. I mean, who wouldn't laugh at that?
A movie would be made, and you would just find things to laugh at.
Find humor in abortion.
If you can do that, you can do anything.
It's just such a rich topic for laughs. L-A-F-F laughs.
Of course. You're talking about the movie that we're going to be talking about.
Yes.
The 1996 comedy. Citizen Ruth.
Citizen Ruth by Alexander Payne. And you know what? I mean, and obviously, you know, I'm kidding with my big pitch, but in a way.
Well, of course.
You have to wonder, holy balls. This is your first shot, man. And this is, and again, we've talked about this in the past. This makes or breaks you sometimes, the impression of this freshman film, this first try, you know, your first studio effort, you finally got some backing and you say, yeah, let's mine for laughs with the topic of abortion.
I know. It is so ballsy, and I do want to I would love to go back and sit in that pitch meeting. Like at what point did they say the word abortion? I mean, did they?
Yeah.
Right? Or did they talk of characters? Did they talk of what the plot would be? You throw that in there.
Yeah.
What, do you just imagine money being thrown at them?
Well, you know, I don't really necessarily have a sense. Now we've had this kind of issue before. We've talked about this season so far, a couple of, like, you know, you have to be under a rock if you haven't heard of this freshman film. Reservoir Dogs, clearly. Toy Story. I mean, who hasn't seen it?
But this isn't one of those.
No, I mean, I don't necessarily have the sense that Citizen Ruth, the freshman film of Alexander Payne, is in the zeitgeist. Well, first of all, I mean, maybe I'm assuming that everyone knows who Alexander Payne is. Which maybe isn't fair. Who is Alexander Payne?
Right. So Alexander Payne, like a Nebraska filmmaker, you know, he's made films that I would imagine or assume the people who would know his films would be Election, Sideways, right, About Schmidt.
Most recently, Downsizing.
Yeah. Those are probably the films that people would know him for, and certainly not Citizen Ruth.
Yeah, probably not. Although, you know, as we're going to talk about, I mean, there's just as much personality, in my opinion, in Citizen Ruth as there is in any of these others. And we'll get into all that. I think it's a fair guess that if you're listening to this episode, maybe you've seen it. But in case you haven't, I think it's only fair, Daniel, if you wouldn't mind laying out what Citizen Ruth is about for our listeners.
Of course. So Citizen Ruth, it's about Ruth Stoops. You know, she's the heroine of the film, if you will. You're laughing when I say that.
I'm laughing because it's not quite a double meaning there, but it almost is.
Yeah, I know. So Ruth Stoops, we meet her and it is obvious that she is living a life of drugs and of, I don't know, she's an addict. I mean, I don't really know how else to say it, right? She's a drug addict. I mean, she's an addict to the point where the way she's trying to get her fix is through an inhalation of toxic chemicals, right? Now, so we meet her in this state at the beginning, and she's thrown in jail. It comes to the attention of, well, really of her, but also the judge that she's pregnant. And then that really kicks off the film to be what it is, which these people on two sides of the abortion issue are trying to use Ruth,
right?
And Ruth is caught in the middle and she's trying to figure out, you know, what her decision actually is. What is her agency, I think, is one of the primary questions of the film.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've got a rock bottom person. I'm trying to think if there's an aspect of Ruth's life that isn't completely bottomed out. Somehow she becomes this political football being passed between the pro-life and the pro-choice movement in this Midwest town.
Absolutely. I mean, we meet some really wonderful characters, right? These satirical figures of both like the religious zealots to the liberal progressive zealots. I mean, then she's caught between those two. I mean, what's really wonderful about Ruth, she can't figure out what she wants.
Yeah.
Or maybe a better way to say it is she knows exactly what she wants. And she's trying to figure out who to get it from. And she's not sure what, right in a way.
Yeah. You know, what was interesting to me was, and I didn't realize this until I did a little bit of poking around about the history of the film, but that this film was actually based on a true story.
That I did not know.
And it actually down to some fairly, fairly specific details. So yeah, as it turns out, Alexander Payne and his writing partner of many, many years, still is his writing partner, in fact, Jim Taylor. They wrote the story, Citizen Ruth, kind of in response to this story that happened in kind of the early 90s. I want to say around 1992. A woman in North Dakota, her name's Martina Graywind of Fargo. And sure enough, addicted to inhalants, had six kids, all of them taken away by the state because she just, you know, she couldn't keep it together. Sure enough, a pro-life group called the Lambs of Christ took her in, offered her something in the neighborhood of $10,000 in order to keep the baby or give it up for adoption, whatever, let the child live. And of course, you know, a pro-choice group came along and offered to foot the bill for the abortion and, you know, and all this. So, of course, the man who represented the Lambs of Christ, who was this group that was trying to get Martina to keep the baby, in a press statement about the situation that Ms. Graywind was in, he described her this way: she's a woman of great ambivalence.
That is incredible.
Which, I don't know, it made me laugh so hard because I thought that quote alone is the movie.
It is a movie. That's right.
That's Citizen Ruth. Laura Dern plays Ruth Stoops, a woman of great ambivalence.
Oh my gosh.
And it's true what you said. She has very little agency, but it's not just that. It's that she also has very little scruples. She has very little intelligence. She has very little motivation. She has very little moral core. She just doesn't really have anything going for her. She's of terrific ambivalence. And that kind of all feeds into this situation where she's basically going to say, look, whoever gives me the most money, I'm just going to do what you do. I can keep the baby. I can abort the baby, whatever. If you've got a payday for me, I'm all ears.
I am holding here a check for $15,000 made out in the name of Ruth Stoops to be presented to her upon the birth of her child.
$15,000!
The baby's
lifesavers also said three different couples have volunteered to adopt Miss Stoops' baby. Meanwhile, anti-abortion protesters continue to arrive outside this house where Ruth Stoops is apparently staying.
Again, going back to the ballsy move by the filmmakers, is that Ruth is so consistent in her ambivalence.
Yeah.
It's remarkable that way. Well, I guess before getting into some of these things, because I think that's going to maybe take us into some of Alexander Payne's films and his other characters, I'm really curious. So this was in 1996. Yeah, when did you first see this? I mean, did you see it when it came out, or was it time after that? Or,
you know, it's funny. I do see a pattern with a lot of these freshman films that we discuss in terms of the way that I discovered them. And it's very, very often I discovered these freshman films through that director's sophomore film. And that's definitely the case here. Clearly, Alexander Payne's filmography has gone on to, you know, I mean, he's been pretty successful. In fact, he's one of a handful of directors that gets final cut on his film. He's a trusted director. His sophomore film, of course, was Election, which I didn't even remember this until I was going back. But you and I have already talked about Election. Mm-hmm. In fact, our very first special we did back in, this is almost 5 years ago now, we did a back to school special. We both recommended a couple of films. The film I recommended actually was Alexander Payne's Election with Matthew Broderick and Reese Witherspoon, which again remains one of my favorite school-based films ever. It's just, it's great. It's hilarious. It's smart. It's quirky. And this is something I want to talk about more with Alexander Payne. It captures this sort of Midwest flavor that is very, very difficult to capture if you're not actually from there. But I loved Election. And sure enough, you know, I went through, listened to the DVD commentary. I was very, very intrigued by Alexander Payne, you know, and that carried in through About Schmidt, Sideways, and on and on and on. In the commentary, he kept referencing his freshman film, which was Citizen Ruth, and, you know, talking about how he reused many of the same actors, much of the same crew, obviously same writing partner and stuff like that, and just kept comparing the process of making Election to what his experience was with Citizen Ruth. Mm-hmm. And this is a movie I'd never even heard of, so I actually had to go seek it out. I can't tell you exactly what year that was. I'm not sure. I don't know if it was before or after I saw like About Schmidt or something like that. I really don't quite know. I do know, though, that I went and sought out Citizen Ruth because of how much talk I had heard about it on this commentary track for Election. And, you know, you expect that a freshman film is going to be on the rougher side. And, you know, maybe there's going to be a grain of personality there that you liked from this director's other films, but you kind of expect something that's sort of unformed. Completely blown away by how hilarious the film was.
Right.
And that was really the main thing. And yeah, and it's smart and it's interesting and it's got like a tone and all this kind of stuff. I remember laughing hysterically throughout the whole thing. I think I really only saw it the once until I watched it again recently for this. Still as hysterical as it was at the time, if not more so. It's just such a funny film. When did you see it?
Yeah, so I saw it. You know, I saw it after About Schmidt. I know that for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I'd seen Election, loved it, but it wasn't really until About Schmidt that I felt like, oh, I'm really connecting with this filmmaker and the types of stories he's telling. Not just the type of filmmaker. Like, there's something about Alexander Payne. There's something about his films I connect with in terms of his exploration of people and the world. That took me to Citizen Ruth. Yeah, and I remember seeing it and also being blown away in a way by the hilarity and also by its nuance. Like, I was so fascinated by that, but not even sure what to do with it then when I first saw it. Like I was aware of it, and I was aware of the complexity, and it's amazing going back now and just seeing how relevant this movie is. Mm-hmm. I mean, in 2021, having gone through a year like 2020,
yeah,
I fell in love with this movie in a whole new way. And I don't think I would have if we were doing this in 2019, I don't think I'd have the same feeling about Citizen Ruth. I would like it a lot, and I think it would be incredible. There's just something about this movie now that seems so fascinating and so important.
You know, and I think this is something we should get out of the way now, because as we said right at the top, it's a comedy and it's about abortion, and abortion is the central issue. And yeah, that's a bold thing. I don't know if this is just a paranoia thing that I feel like I need to nip it in the bud. I'm sure that we have listeners that have very strong feelings about the topic of abortion.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to say this. There's nothing wrong with having strong feelings about the topic. In fact, I'll go so far as to say I have respect for the passion that people have on both sides of the issue. Honestly, mm-hmm. I really do. I hear that. I see that. I know that for many people, it is the soberest issue you could possibly. But I have to say, though, that I think partly that's what makes this movie so great and so funny, is because it is such a sacred cow topic, particularly as Americans. It's so polarizing, and it's this big feelings kind of area. Part of what I love about this movie is you say, you know, if we're gonna be this intense about this topic and feel this strongly about it, one of the things we should probably allow ourselves to do is find the areas of it that maybe we can parody, maybe we can laugh at. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a way in to kind of understand the nuance of that people that believe things that I don't necessarily believe. I mean, in that way, and I hate to puff it up too much because maybe that's more than Alexander Payne ever meant the movie to do.
Right.
I think that's where it sort of gets kind of cool and important almost. I don't know. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, it feels important. It feels important because it's fascinating. Like you feel yourself rooting against characters on both sides of the issue.
Yeah.
And then find yourself not being able to completely because, well, I think if you're genuinely watching this movie and recognizing, I think, some of what's going on, you just recognize like, oh, wow, people's urgency, people's passion for what's going on. Like there's some sincerity there. And at the same time, it's possible that type and level of sincerity breeds a certain type of certainty and contempt for those who think differently. It's all kind of connected. And I actually think this is what's really fascinating to me, is that we're doing so much of what the film exposes that people discussing an issue do, which is not talk about Ruth Stoops at all. Like we're just talking.
Yeah.
Right.
We're
just talking about the kind of the issues at hand. And we're talking about the different sides of a thing rather than a flesh and blood human being that is in the middle of it and living it. And I love that so much.
Yeah. Well, Daniel, you know this because this is the difference between you and I, in that we have slightly different backgrounds. Clearly, you've lived your whole life, right, in California?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But, you know, of course, I do come from the Midwest, and not just that, but I come from the Bible Belt evangelical Midwest. And
right there.
I'm right there. You know, in fact, I went to college in the middle of the corn right there, where there's, you know, if you throw a rock, you'll hit a church.
Really? That's what it was like?
Oh, man. I mean, it was funny. And again, this is probably going into more detail than we all need, but I went to a college that also had a seminary attached to it. And the thing that was so interesting is, you know, you would talk to, you know, they would, Seminoids is what they called themselves.
Really? They call themselves Seminoids?
Seminoids, yeah.
Dang.
You never heard this term?
No, I'm a Seminoid, though, I guess.
Because you've been to seminary, of course.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You didn't know you were a Seminoid?
No, never knew that, never wanted to know it. Don't know what to do with it.
It's true. And you would talk to the Seminoids about what their plans were after they were done with their seminary, you know, whether their doctorate or everything like that. Oh, I'll probably just start a church around here.
No.
That's what they would all say. Now, some of them would be like, no, I really want to go and become a missionary over in, you know, wherever, you know, halfway around the world, or different people want to do different things. But most of them, they wanted to stay in the belt. They wanted to be a pastor, do some sort of ministry, you know. The idea of leaving that bubble was just, eh. And by the way, I'm not saying this like these are insincere people or anything like that. But I bring that up to say there's this very, very sort of specific and insulated culture that you have in the Bible Belt Midwest. I probably mentioned this in the past. I was raised in a very fundamentalist evangelical context.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a private Christian school in high school, in which extra credit was offered to students who would stand in abortion picket lines.
Oh, wow.
So I'm not kidding when I say there's stuff in Citizen Ruth that might seem extreme, and it's not as extreme as you may think it is. It's actually, some of it is pretty accurate. Now, clearly, Alexander Payne takes these personalities, you know, most specifically, he takes the personality of Ruth Stoops, played by Laura Dern, with an amazing performance. We'll talk about that in a bit. The bedrock that's underneath that whole movie, and in fact, many of his subsequent movies, is this sort of thing. And, you know, of course, Alexander Payne is from Nebraska. He does understand these people. He knows how it works. And he has just enough intellectual removal from the situation that he was clearly brought up in, that he's able to write something and direct something like this. But yeah, there's a little bit, when I watch Citizen Ruth, there's a lot of laughs and a little bit of cringe, because I'm like, man, I remember that. I remember the teacher who said that. I remember the youth pastor who said that. And I remember I was part of the high school purity culture that, you know, was definitely, you know, part of it. And I'm not saying these things are all bad, but there's a lot of propaganda, and there's a lot of, you know, centered around ideas about sexuality and virginity and definitely abortion and stuff like that. And the idea of taking a character like Ruth Stoops and putting her in the middle of all that swirl, I mean, it's already funny. So I realize that's a long way around the way to say, like, it's extreme, but it rings so true to me when I see it.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up. And I don't think I've made these connections before, because I didn't think of Alexander Payne as a filmmaker I connect with in a geographical sense. We've talked about it here, but I grew up in the Antelope Valley, so in Lancaster, which is a really small part of Southern California, and in so many ways the complete opposite of the Southern California that I had always heard about or was aware of. And so some of what you describe in terms of your own growing up in church and the evangelical world and that experience, like, I resonate a lot with, and those characters and those people, right? Like, again, there's the sincerity and certainty about a position and also what the good is in a particular position that I'm so aware of. And I think that you're right. Like, I, you know, in Citizen Ruth, you know, Ruth gets connected to this family, Norm and Gail, and I know them. Like, you know, that's what I feel like. I know Norm and Gail, and I know their story, and I know their youngest son, who's just kind of along for the ride, and their older daughter, who's clearly the rebellious one, trying to find her own way. It's in contradiction to her parents. Like, you, like, I know these people, and I'd probably feel like I even know them more than I do it from the characters in the film who are on the other side of the position. Like, it's so fascinating to me that he's able to nuance them, and I guess they're not that nuanced, right? I mean, I feel like in a way they feel like real people, but he's also trying to show some about them that he wants to uncover, at least reveal some of who they are.
You know, I would say, though, I think you were onto something the first time. I think there is nuance there that you don't expect. I think the easy thing to do, in fact, maybe even the Hollywood thing to do, would be to just go full out caricature on every character, because, oh, let's just, you know, that'll just amp the funny. But Alexander Payne doesn't really do that. He does give that sort of extra layer to almost all the characters. Like, the Bible Belt Christians, they also have their own little closet full of skeletons here and there that you get a slight peek on. You know, you get the sense that maybe under certain circumstances, Norm, played by the awesome Kurtwood Smith, that probably everyone knows from either That 70s Show or RoboCop, great actor. You get the sense that, you know, even though he plays this, you know, really hardcore Christian guy who believes what he believes, but under the right circumstances, he might cheat, you know. I don't know. You know, you get a side glance. But Alexander Payne also doesn't let us go so far with our feelings about, like, whatever topic that we're like, oh, okay, clearly I know who the good guy and the bad guy is. As you go over to the pro-choice side of things, they've got their own set of nutty things happening over on that side. And they're pretty manipulative themselves. And they're kind of willing to do and say things that aren't all necessarily above board in order to activate their own agendas.
Ruth, this might be a little confusing at first. but there's something you need to know. I'm not exactly who I appear to be. The truth is, I'm not a baby saver. I work for pro-choice. You see, Ruth, there's a war on. And I guess you could call me a spy.
Yeah, it's big and it's parody and it's they're caricatures, but Alexander Payne seems to not be content to just let us stay in the world of a big broad comedy. He's like, no, you're not really going to think about this later if I leave it there. And I think he wants us to think about it.
And I think that that's true in so many of his other films, right? Where he'll take a concept, he'll take an idea, even if he's trying to do something satirical with it, or he's trying to say something beyond the film itself, there's still so many different layers to so many different characters that you identify with them, you attach yourselves to them. And I think that's something that's really unique to Payne in the stories that he tells. He doesn't let you find the one you're supposed to be rooting for. Like there are so many reasons to root against a character as to root for them. In almost every one of his films, I just encountered a human being.
Yeah.
And there's just something really beautiful about that.
Yeah.
And there's something really frustrating about it. And there's something really redemptive and healing about it too, right? I mean, there's so many different components to watching a Payne film that you get, and it's not easy. You want characters to make different decisions. As soon as you feel like they might, they don't. Right. And then when you expect them to do something else, they surprise you. And I just think, I mean, that's my life.
Yeah.
And that's the life of people I live with. Right. Like that's, yeah. And I love that.
I remember back when we were doing our Ridley Scott episode, I remember it came up that Ridley Scott, obviously fantastic filmmaker, but sometimes his Achilles heel has been casting. There's been times that Ridley Scott has taken what could have been an outstanding film, and we have to kind of be satisfied with a good film because it was maybe miscast or cast for dollars or something like that. Consistently, I would say with Alexander Payne films, his casting is flawless. I mean, it's almost supernaturally good casting.
Yep.
I would say probably, and I would put this up with maybe some of the finest freshman films that you and I have talked about, the protagonist of Ruth Stoops, Laura Dern being cast in that role, I would put that in the category of insanely good casting. This is such a difficult thing to do. It's easy to look at a film that's already made and it makes you feel a certain way, and the scenes that work the way they do or the way they or don't work the way they don't work, and say, oh, well, you could have done that, or, oh, yeah, that was funny, I like that. But when you're making a film, there's so many things you don't know. You don't know how certain things are going to come across. And this film is such a roll of the dice when it comes to how to portray this character. Mm-hmm. Because on paper, this is the worst person you can possibly imagine. And this is the person who's essentially shepherding your whole film from an acting standpoint. Mm-hmm. The whole film rests on Laura Dern's performance. She's being asked to play a character that you can't help but hate. But yet it's Laura Dern. You can't quite hate her. You want to, but you're so drawn in a way to what she's doing. It's like being put on this high speed bullet train throughout the whole thing where you're like, yeah, I mean, I know she's horrible, but I got to hang with this. There's something that's so compelling, and there's something that I hate so much, and yet I weirdly like so much. And that's all just Laura Dern. You can't really direct that. I don't know, to take a character who, you know, like you said at the front, the only reason she's even having a discussion about abortion is because it comes down to like her feelings about jail and money and stuff like that. I mean, this is a lowest of the low person. And I don't want to go so far as to say you're rooting for Ruth Stoops, but you're weirdly invested in Ruth Stoops.
Yep.
The only way you can get there is through performance. I mean, the screenplay is great. Don't get me wrong. But Laura Dern, what she's doing in this movie, it's bananas. It's astonishing.
It is astonishing. I mean, I think of that courtroom scene, right? Because, yeah, from the very beginning, you're not sure how, well, you're going to be living with Ruth Stoops, and you think, oh, man. Like, you want, from that moment when she goes into that hardware store and gets the the spray paint,
yeah,
right, and inhales it because she just got money from her brother-in-law. You think, oh, I wonder what the redemptive arc of this story will be,
right?
And there is none. I mean, there is not in that sense. Like it doesn't take place.
Ruth, come on, Ruth, we're all looking for you. What are you doing? That looks like my model glue. Is that my model glue? You're not supposed to smell it like that.
Get out of here, kid!
Mom! Dad!
Hey, shut up!
Over here! Mom! Dad!
I said shut up, you fucker!
And that one, there's a moment in the courtroom when the judge says something like, you know, you have four children that you had to give up because you were an unfit mother, and her response is, like, no, only two.
Record also shows that over the years, the state has stripped you of four children, declaring you in all cases an unfit mother.
I was only unfit for two of them. First one got adopted, and I think the second one...
Shut up! You sicken me.
Sorry. Sorry.
As if that's better. Like, somehow, that's a beat that's funny, but it's also the way she delivers it. It's like, wow, she really believes that, too. Like, you don't know.
She thinks she's completely justified in anything that she does.
Yes.
There's no introspection at all. It's just, she's just Ruth.
Yeah, she's totally Ruth. And then, you know, toward the end, without giving, too much away, there's something happens. You see her intimating this vulnerability, and that she wants to talk to somebody about what's happened to her and her body. And you get the sense, like, wow, this is going to be a really profound moment for her, for many different reasons, not just because she's not able to, but also because nobody seems to care about it. She can't, and she doesn't. And it's only because of your investment and because of Laura Dern's performance that you actually feel bummed. Like, you don't, you feel like, wow, there was a missed opportunity, like, for this person being known in a really beautiful way. And, you know, and she wasn't. And I think that speaks to that type of performance where you're along with her the whole way. And you, I think investment's the perfect word. Like, you're invested in her.
Yeah. So the movie is very, particularly for a freshman film, is very deftly directed. Now, not that this is the first thing that Alexander Payne, again, you know, Omaha native, Alexander Payne, not that this is the first thing that he ever directed. It's the first feature film he ever did. He cut his teeth in, I'll just say it, softcore porn for Playboy, just doing these little things for, I don't know if there was Showtime or Playboy Channel or something like that. Clearly, though, there is a lot of gears turning, even if he's doing film that, you know, probably at least on the surface anyway, is lower form of entertainment, or at the very least a less thoughtful form of entertainment. It's interesting, even as far back as Citizen Ruth, we can see like the seeds of Alexander Payne mm-hmm. being planted. And I was wondering if there's anything that stood out to you about this film that you saw like, okay, I'm seeing the interests of Alexander Payne right up front.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it really does go back to some of what we've been describing with the characters he's choosing to follow. These people that have so much about them that you want to detest, I think, in a way. I mean, I think that's a strong word, but I think it's true. Like, you want to, but then you also just see like the absolute possibility that these people have, even if when they don't deliver on that, you see it and you notice it. I mean, that's something I see through all of his films, and from beginning here, you know, he's not a showy filmmaker.
Yeah,
he's not trying to do things with the camera or angles all that often. I think when he does it, they're very key moments. Mm-hmm. But he's not trying to do it all that often. He's really wanting to let the story and the characters kind of play out in the way that they will, in particular with other people. I mean, relationships are really key to Alexander Payne's films too. I mean, it's not just the strong center performances, but also the way that those performances are then interacting with some of the supporting casts. And I think that such strong supporting characters all the time in his, oh, yeah. Those are not wasted characters, wasted moments, but absolutely central to the stories that Payne is wanting to tell. Yeah, and I guess the last thing is, I'll just say, like, the redemptive moments, when they are there, you have to be invested all the way through to recognize them for what they are. Otherwise, you think, okay, well, what did I just watch?
Right.
That just seems like an absolute misery fest sometimes. But if you can kind of catch those moments where you say, oh, okay, that seemed good. That seemed good for that person, or I can see how there was something, some little light there.
Yeah.
I mean, what about for you?
I think it's interesting, even hearing you say that about, like, redemptive moments, because I think you're right. I think they are there. I think part of what makes them land so well is that he also sabotages the redemption, like, kind of actively sometimes.
That's right.
Like, in his characters. Like, you can just tell, like, it just kind of makes him uncomfortable, the idea of just, let's put this character on a Joseph Campbell journey, and then at the end of it, everyone has learned something very valuable, and then and they're all stronger for it. I mean, you can tell that Alexander Payne is like, that's kind of boring. We've seen that. At the same time, he also, I mean, does want his characters to evolve, but he's not going to just hand us that. Or if they are going to evolve, they're going to evolve very imperfectly. I mean, this film ends with Ruth. I mean, I guess it's an evolution, but I don't know that I'd go so far as to call it a redemption. I mean, maybe kind of. She's found a little bit of her agency, I think. And I guess in that sense, there's some redemption. But has she found any sort of moral center or anything? No. I mean, she's, you know, at the end of the spoiler, but, you know, at the end of the movie, she's walking off with a bag full of money that she basically stole. And she's just heading off into the sunset with it and just figuring, well, I mean, yeah, she's standing up for herself, but in a really shitty way.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's there, but, you know, I feel like Alexander Payne is going, I don't need to teach you what redemption means, and I don't need to teach you what moral character means. You're big people, you know what it is. Let's tell the side of the story that's at the very least more intriguing, and maybe at best speaks a little bit more accurately to the world that we're in, and, you know, to the people that maybe we know in real life, that we're not all terrible people, but we're not all great people either. You know, I mean, let's be honest about it. And that actually feeds into something that you see in almost every Alexander Payne movie, which is the idea of betrayal and infidelity. He's very, very interested in these things. Now, in this one, like, the infidelity part of it is probably only kind of hinted at. I think I mentioned, you know, with Norm, you know, there, like, you see him kind of sometimes giving Ruth the eye and just sort of like wondering if this is something that he would really pursue. And no, I can't. But infidelity plays a huge role in Election, about Schmidt, certainly in Sideways. I mean, you know, basically the plot of the movie is built around it in The Descendants. There's shades of it even in Downsizing. It's just, it's a very rich ground for Alexander Payne to mine. You can just tell that it's something he's very, very keen on and very, very interested in. And I think along those lines, and maybe part of this is, you know, having a background in softcore, but he's very frank sexually, you know. I mean, he's and not even necessarily with nudity, although, you know, there's nudity now and then too. I mean, who can forget Kathy Bates jumping into a jacuzzi completely
Doc Schmidt.
In the buck?
Who can forget, you say?
Who can forget? But it's funny, like, you know, I mean, the frankly, Citizen Ruth opens with a sex scene. I mean, honestly, a very unsexy sex scene.
Oh, yeah,
but
right.
it's very frank.
It's part of the bottoming out of that character, right? I mean, it's part of the sadness of that moment.
Yeah. And no one watching that scene is going, oh, wow, this is so hot. No, you're going, ugh, okay, how long do I have to watch this before we, you know, it's just not that kind of thing. And he's willing to do that. He's willing to actually use sex to make us uncomfortable. He's not trying to turn us on with it. He just wants us to go, ugh, okay. one of the very first things we learn about Tracy Flick in Election is that she had an affair with one of her high school teachers.
Oh, there's one more thing about Tracy I think you should know.
Her pussy gets so wet, you can't believe it.
Don't tell me that. I don't want to know that.
A few months before the election, she'd gotten herself in a little trouble with my best friend, Dave Novotny.
And you're like, I don't want to know. As an audience member, I don't want to know this. This is way, way too much. But he wants to kind of take us there in that way to be like, look, I'm not going to dance around this kind of off limits thing. But you mix all that with this weird sort of like Midwest Bible Belt, you know, kind of a thing. And that juxtaposition is kind of where Alexander Payne lives. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's the strange thing. Like, we feel uncomfortable. We feel like maybe this is too much. I don't know if I like looking at this. And at the same time, it's a comment on that culture in a way. And I don't know. I kind of picture him liking the fact that he's making us squirm a little bit.
That's interesting. Yeah. And I do wonder if that's where, you know, going back to what you said before about being in a place, growing up in a place where all of that is certainly happening together, that you're picking up on that, the intentionality that Payne has as a filmmaker, wanting to do that for an audience. Because I hadn't considered his way of actually trying to make us squirm. And then maybe delighting in that, as if our coming to terms with that or our kind of wrestling with that is revealing something about us in a way, right? I mean, yeah. And it's an interesting perspective.
You know, I and again, this is, I doubt I'll be able to find it, but I remember Payne giving an interview about Schmidt. It was either about Schmidt or Nebraska. I can't remember which one. But he was talking about the fact that there's kind of a thing that happens in the Midwest that it's very, very difficult to describe to people that aren't there. Midwesterners love talking, but they don't really enjoy saying things, which you kind of, in some ways, you get a sense for that. They like talking around the issue. They like assuming some weird sort of level of propriety that we all kind of know what we mean, but we're going to sort of talk around it. We're going to leave the parts of the conversation that are most important to talk about unspoken. That kind of does two things at once. There's, on the one hand, there's a little bit of a dignity there, and it's true. And I say this as someone who was born and raised in the Midwest. Midwesterners don't want you to lose your dignity. they want you to be good, solid, working Christian people. You know, they want you to have that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they also don't really necessarily want you to confront everyone about everything all the time. It's just like, just leave it. You know, it's fine. Just calm down. Just put your head down and do your job. We'll be fine. We don't need to question everything. Questioning everything is really just going to cause us pain. So let's not really do that. And I think there are times that like Payne shows us that in some of his movies, and he sticks an interrupter in there. Test the bounds of that. Like, of this psychology, how far can we really take this? We're not really going to talk about the real issue here. Because he's like, at some point, you're going to have to talk about something. Mm-hmm. Because Ruth Stoops is sleeping in your guest room. So yep. If you think you can't really talk about this for a while, you're wrong. You're going to have to talk about it at some point. You're going to have to talk about the fact that a drug addict with all these different items on her rap sheet is causing complete chaos and ruin in your home. And there's not an easy fix for that. So what are you going to do?
It's interesting, Jeremy, as you describe that too, how Midwesterners seem to be. I mean, I see the way that you've chosen to live and almost the way that you are as a person seems like an affront to that. I'm not saying that you have made a conscious choice of like, I'm not going to do the Midwestern thing. But as you describe it, I think that's the opposite of who you are. I mean, you're right. You're an address the issue. Let's not talk around something. Yeah. Let's confront what is really there. I'd not thought about that being your friend for so long as being part of maybe the impetus for how you are and the things that the beautiful ways that you are.
I mean, you know, I appreciate that, and it's probably worth saying that a lot of us we know from an early age that we have to leave. And I was that way. I knew very early on, I have to go. And by the way, I love the Midwest. I love Midwestern people. It is shitty when I hear the places that I grew up described as flyover states and things like that. And just like, this ignorant red country or, whatever it is, even though it's not really the defining thing about me. I mean, I can't help it. I still feel like a guy from the Midwest, but, and I could say the same about my wife. We knew we had to go, because we didn't really fit that mold. And I think that's true with a lot of people. I mean, the place we live, there's just so many transplants. I mean, how many people do you know that came here from the Midwest? It's countless, right? I mean, there's so many because they can't really be in that environment. And I'm not even saying there's anything wrong with it necessarily, but just this whole culture of silence and put your head down and, don't question and just make sure that you're, just volunteer at church and you'll be okay. And again, that sounds like a criticism of it, but it's not. But a lot of us don't fit in there. And we know it.
I appreciate that. I mean, I know we're supposed to be talking about pain, but now that I got you talking about yourself, I do have another question for you that I'm really curious about as I was watching Citizen Ruth. You've talked about some of your life here in the show and what you've felt like you and Carrie have given yourself to and really wanting to love children, to create a space and a home for children who don't have that or who don't have family. And so as I was watching Citizen Ruth, I kept on thinking, Ruth's. I mean, Ruth Stoops. This is something that I'm sure that you're privy to. And so I'm just curious how this film hit you in that way, or if it did. Maybe it didn't. I was just wondering that when I was watching it this time. I'm curious of Jeremy's perspective on a Ruth, just given your life.
Yeah.
And this doesn't have to make it in there. I'm just as honest.
No, I know. I'm trying to think if there's a way to talk about it that I would even be able to publish. But yeah, so as you mentioned, my wife and I are foster parents, and caring for displaced children is something we've been involved with for several years. But you don't become a foster parent for any amount of time without encountering a Ruth Stoops. People like Ruth are the reason that a lot of children are in the position that they're in. On the one side, I get very frustrated with Ruth because I know the damage that Ruth is doing. As much as we can laugh, I know the damage that Ruth does to her offspring, the generational hardship that Ruth has wrought. On the other hand, life has forced me to also have empathy for Ruth, to see Ruth as a person who has limited capability. I'm trying so hard to figure this out, like how to talk about it. But Ruth can only do so much. And the lie is that Ruth has the power on her own to change her circumstance and to think through in a focused way what her situation is and how to fix it and all that. But the fact of the matter is, knowing real Ruth Stoops, they're not doing well. And we still have to do our best to come alongside Ruth Stoops. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like I'm not talking about this well. But
no, I mean, I appreciate what you're saying. And I think matters to me and is an important one for the film is because nobody in that film, probably including Ruth herself, knows that about Ruth or believes that about Ruth. For the two sides, Ruth is a symbol. She's a possibility of furthering their side and their project. For Ruth herself, Ruth is who she is in a particular moment, whether it's wanting money for the next thing, whether it's listening to tapes so that she can somehow be able to purchase a home.
Page 52 of your study guide. You'll see how, at no risk to you, and with absolutely no money down, you can own your own home. It's only fear that holds people back in life and keeps them from achieving the financial independence they deserve. If you just have a little confidence in yourself and allow the Larry Jarvik system to work for you, I guarantee you'll be equipped to take control of your own economic destiny in ways you never dreamed possible.
And so, like, nobody actually knows who Ruth is. And that's one of the beautiful things about the film. We're constantly confronted with that reality.
Yeah.
And that's actually the tragedy of it. You know, there's that haunting final shot where, yeah, Ruth, she got her money and she's walking away and she's been on the spotlight and nobody knows. There she goes, even though she's almost what seems like in the middle of everybody. But because the two sides are yelling at each other, she's able to leave and nobody notices. Like, how much of that is just the way that we can find ourselves living? That we, in terms of, I don't know, our ideas, convictions, we find a side that we're against and don't really care about anybody in the middle of that's actually living the thing that we're trying to discuss, to talk about, that we have passion for. I appreciate that perspective because I think it's an important one.
Yeah, it is really, really interesting in 2021 how relevant Citizen Ruth is. I'm going to go so far as to say way more relevant now than it was in 1996.
100%.
Being able to zero in on the factioning of American culture, particularly around this, you know, this hot button issue, it was almost prophetic in a way for him to be able to put together a story and to put together thoughts like this. And again, this is another thing about Alexander Payne. Like, he doesn't really feel the need to necessarily resolve everything. You get some resolutions, but I'm intrigued by the Burt Reynolds character mm-hmm. coming in. I'm intrigued that he got Burt Reynolds to be in this movie, for
I know,
one thing.
But, seriously.
But, you know, all that Burt Reynolds represents, you know, being just sort of like the grandmaster sort of this kind of pro-life movement, that you have it in the back of your mind that you're just like, is this kind of a game that you're playing? I mean, how much do you believe it? And how much is this just this is just kind of a power game? Which there is no, again, there is no more relevant narrative mm-hmm. than, you know, especially right now than those sorts of things, because we all were forced to ask these questions about our leaders, you know, about not just when we see our leaders fall and are caught in horrible activity, but just also I guess, unfortunately, Citizen Ruth feeds the cynicism to a degree, but, you know, there's a weird just sort of like, yeah, it feeds our cynicism, but it also kind of gives us a top level view of what that conflict is. And I can't really say that I walked away from Citizen Ruth knowing how to deal with that dichotomy and knowing how to deal with that polarization. Mm-hmm. I feel a little better informed, but I feel like Alexander Payne's saying, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know either, man. I mean, this is a different aspect of the conversation, but I don't know. What should we do? It's America.
Yeah, right. I mean, and I think if there is anything that we could potentially be equipped with, and I don't know if he was doing it, but it's certainly something I thought of, was what does it look like for the Ruths in the situation being able to speak, mm-hmm. to somehow invite their telling of their story as they see it? And the thing is that there are probably a million different Ruths with a million different stories that wouldn't necessarily line up perfectly. It's not like you'd get one perfect telling of the story that every other person would be satisfied with. That's not the point. The point is that there's a story in the middle. How do we take the time? How do we have the compassion? How do we have the interest to actually let that story be told and be shared? I mean, I think that's something that I feel like at the end of the film, I felt so much conviction for. You know, there's one of the things that kept on being said throughout the film, or at least toward the end, was we don't want money to be part of your decision, right? And so, this keeps being said with more money being offered, right? Yeah. As if that's going to solve the problem. Is we don't want money to be part of it, so we'll just give you more.
$15,000 might sound like a lot of money, but there are more important things to consider.
Like what?
Come on, Ruth. Do you think you're ready to have a child?
Yeah, I have four other kids and I didn't make a cent.
Besides, they said they got people to adopt.
And can you stay off drugs and alcohol for the next 7 or 8 months?
God damn it! How come every time I want to do something, somebody tries to keep me from doing it? Why can't I ever do what I want?
And I think of that in 2021. So what could that money be? I mean, it could be science, you know. It's like we just don't, it's like all of this, the things that we, that shouldn't, that we should be able to talk about or to not have as part of the decision, but as connected and somehow helpful to the decision. And yet it just becomes co-opted and used by different, whatever, right? I mean, that's just where we find ourselves, where like nothing seems to be untainted in terms of its ability to sway or manipulate. And that's convicting. How do I do that, right? How do we do that?
Yeah. So how did Payne evolve from Citizen Ruth? I mean, this was his starting block. What changed with Payne? It occurred to me, Citizen Ruth is probably his most flat out, this is a comedy of all of his films. Election also hilarious, and I would definitely mark that as a comedy. But even in Election, you're starting to get these little shades of, you know, you're starting to get the little bit of Alexander Payne. Well, let's mm-hmm. crush you a little bit over here and over there with a little bit of thing. And that's not to say that's completely absent from Citizen Ruth, but you're there for the laughs with Citizen Ruth, without a doubt. And he's sneaking some very subversive ideas in, but it's all underneath laughs. By the time we get to About Schmidt, his third film, again, hilarious film, absolutely hysterical, but you're not going to walk away from that film without tears, actually, though. You're just, it's built that way. Certainly, you know, as you get into The Descendants and, you know, Nebraska, and Downsizing is kind of just an odd bird, which maybe we'll talk about more later. But Citizen Ruth, I think he was just establishing himself as, I'm a premium comedy director. I can write and direct funny shit. And here it is. You know, it's going to be thoughtful, and it's going to be bold, and it's going to be unapologetic. It's going to be edgy, you know, but higher than all that, it's going to be funny. And he's kept the comedy, but it's not been so single-minded as it was in that first film.
I see that. I wonder if I was going to say something, or what I'm going to say is getting at something similar in a different way, is I do feel like his films become more patient.
Oh.
Citizen Ruth had an energy to it. I think all of his films have an energy to them. I'm not saying that, but I do think that there's a, I think it maybe has something to do with the camera, and it seems a little bit slower. This one seemed like it took a little bit more liberties with editing, and, you know, I hinted at this earlier that even though you see in this film like his willingness to let a scene or something breathe, there are still those moments where he's trying to do something. I think there's some interesting dissolves, you know, in this film that, in the editing that happened that I thought, oh, wow, that doesn't ring true for me in later Payne films of really trying to do this. I'm thinking of the Laura Dern shot on the bed, right? When she sees the money, in the bag, and where the camera is, just makes it seem like, it reminds me of the scene in Raising Arizona, you know, when Holly Hunter is looking down at the babies and you just see her face glowing and then this is Laura Dern's face glowing, but because she's looking at money and it should be a baby.
Is it like that? Are you talking about like that sort of low angle POV?
Yes. Yeah.
Where you are the money, essentially.
Yep. And I just love that. I feel like it told that moment so perfectly and said a lot of different things. Everything kind of clicks together in a moment, and it's not a long moment, it's a brief moment. So yeah, the pacing of the film felt a little bit faster than I would say his later films would. Election, though, I don't think so much, but About Schmidt, The Descendants, Nebraska, those seem to me a little bit more patient. So those are some ways I've seen him evolve. I'm not even saying that as in terms of, oh, he's gotten better. It's just the way that I've noticed some some change in it.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I wasn't really thinking about that in terms of pace, but I think that's true. And I think that feeds back into the I want to establish myself as a solid comedy director. He's funny. He's just a funny guy. I mean, you know, even as recently as Downsizing, there's funny stuff that happens. But Nebraska, you know, it's not this hilarious movie, but there is hilarious things happening in that movie.
Right.
And he can put together those kinds of scenes with, well, he makes them look effortless. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously they're not. But he's not afraid of the somber scene or the quiet scene. He's not afraid to put us up there on the roof of Jack Nicholson's RV and contemplating his own mortality and the universe and stuff like that.
I'm sorry, Helen. Can you forgive me? Can you forgive me?
He may have been doing that kind of thing a little bit in Citizen Ruth, but it was never not funny, mm-hmm, you know?
Right.
And I think he felt the pressure to always make it funny. You know, now he doesn't always feel that pressure, for good or for bad, honestly. Like, you know, in some right. of his most recent work, there are moments that I'm just kind of miss it a little bit, if I'm being honest, mm-hmm. you know? But so Payne's an interesting guy. I mean, you know, we dealt with this last time a little bit, you know, I don't want to harp on this every time because frankly, it happens too often for this to
sadly.
Yeah. The fact that, you know, Alexander Payne, again, allegations of misconduct and all that. And I'm going to say the same thing I said last time. I don't know enough about it to speak intelligently about it. I will say this, and this is just me speaking for myself. I can't speak for both of us, but I don't know that how helpful it is for me to comment on the lives of these directors, especially, you know, in the wake of allegations or in the wake of potential bad behavior. I'm most focused on the artistry and the career of a director, and that's where I am here. But suffice it to say, and again, this is just my feeling on it, if you want to find out more about, you know, Alexander Payne in the news and things that may have gone on earlier in his career, then you can certainly seek that out. But I just put it this way. I think it's good. Actors are and other people involved in the film community are feeling more and more freedom to come out about things like that. But at the same time, I don't pretend to be like an expert or an authority about those things. So I don't know what more to say about it.
Absolutely. And this one seems more recent. It still seems like it's an evolving conversation in a way of where things seem to be. I appreciate those comments. And I do think it's important that these types of things are being known and being investigated, and that there are places to go find out details, or at least be aware of the conversation as it's happening.
Yeah. And I say that partly to say, when I say the words, I love Alexander Payne, I am talking about the artwork. And it's something I can say. I got to tell you, Daniel, I was reminded with Citizen Ruth why I love the films of Alexander Payne, some more than others. But I just, he's a very, very gifted storyteller. And he rides this line of using, like, you know, these enormous mainstream actors that bring in these huge budgets. But at the same time, there's this independent spirit to, I'm going to go so far as to say, pretty much all of his films.
Yeah, that's right.
They feel like very personal things. I don't know. It's just, it's that sort of script and directing marriage that it's hard to put your finger on, but he's just such a solid, intellectual, funny, skilled craftsman that, I don't know, I just, you have to get into the work of Alexander Payne.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I just trust his work.
Yeah.
You know, as long as he's making films, I will watch them. Mm-hmm. He's a filmmaker who plumbs the depths of what it means to be a human being in all of our complexity and existential grief and questioning and longing. Like, it's just so many of those things are on display in his films that I love that. And I think that he does it in a way that a lot of filmmakers don't. You just described really well why he's not afraid to put these scenes in his films together in the same film, right? Like, that was funny to okay, I don't really even know what to think about that, to, wow, here's this scene is filled with so much, and so much pathos and empathy and compassion. It's just so beautiful, like all those different things together.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's moments, Alexander Payne moments over the years that, and we didn't talk about this in advance or anything like that, but I can think of moments that have just been so like, that cut right to the issue. And I say this as a Midwesterner, I know that situation. I know that moment. I'm always struck by, there's a moment in toward the end of the film in About Schmidt, Jack Nicholson, he stands up at his daughter's wedding to give the speech. And the speech he has planned is a tell-off. This guy's an idiot. You shouldn't be marrying him. I've just had the most ridiculous past few days of my life because, you know, this whole family is just a bunch of crazy people and all that. You need to run for the hills and all that. I don't support any of this. And there's like this sort of camera push on Jack Nicholson, and he overcomes it. Mm-hmm. He swallows all of it. He gives the bland sort of Midwest father of the bride speech that he knows he's supposed to give there, and saying all the like the nice, sweet little things. He means as much as he possibly can, even though, you know, he still thinks what he thinks. It's not about him, which is for Schmidt is a big realization.
I recall the day when Jeannie first told us she'd been proposed to. We hadn't yet met this Randall fellow, so we were understandably a little suspicious. Later, she brought him home for Christmas so we could get a look at him. I remember there was a big snowstorm, and Randall here helped me shovel off the front walk. He pitched right in. Yep.
I can't tell you how Midwest a thing that is to say. And it's a perfect example of like talking around the issue, but there's a protocol and you got to follow the protocol. And in this case, good on him for doing that. To me, it's just, it's a very powerful moment.
Yeah, I think that's a really great moment. And I think that is a Payne film right there.
Yeah. That whole moment was, I love my daughter so much, I'm gonna give her this gift. And we all know that as an audience, even though the words have nothing to do with that.
Yeah, it's so good. That's right. It's great.
I don't know if you, again, I don't want to put you on the spot. Is there any Alexander Payne moments that you can think of that, you know, I'm not drinking any fucking Merlot or whatever.
That's good.
I'm stuck with you over the years.
I mean, going back to the, you mentioned this, there's a moment in About Schmidt when he starts writing Indugo, I think. Is it? I think
that's, Indugo, yeah. Yeah.
That first moment when he begins to do that, like when he sees something, he knows he needs to respond to it, and he begins to do it. Why that's a favorite moment is because it's not a silly thing. Well, it could be. It might be, right? Yeah, that's the thing, that's the line that is kind of being walked there. It's like, okay, here's a person who's trying to grasp for some sort of meaning in life. This is his way of doing that.
Dear Indugo, my name is Warren R. Schmidt, and I am your new foster father.
And I think that's a favorite moment because it's, again, that's a Payne moment where it's something that could be seen as utterly ridiculous and should carry really little weight, becomes something that is profound for one of his characters. So I love that.
Yeah.
And I love Jack Nicholson's, his performance, his telling of that. And as he's saying what is being written, I don't know. There's so much about that I connect with.
Yeah. So Alexander Payne, he's done a little grip of movies, he's not like a Martin Scorsese or a Coen brothers that's got like, you know, scores of films or anything like that, but he's got a nice little handful.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think in terms of where Citizen Ruth fits in his body of work?
Oh man, this is a tough one. I think I would put it in the middle to just below middle. I think that's probably my place for it. Yeah, that's what I'll leave that. I mean, I didn't do a hard ranking or anything.
Yeah.
What about, yeah, let me hear you. Did you do a hard ranking?
No, I didn't. Not this time. I mean, I was surprised at how much I loved it. I knew I would because I remember how much I enjoyed it, but just how well, how solidly it held up, how well it speaks to today. But yeah, I would say in terms of craft, I mean, yeah, he's added some bells and whistles to the craft, but he was never really the, I'm going to knock you out with this insane cinematography. It's very solid storytelling. Mm-hmm. It's very competent cinematography. I don't know that there's, I can think of any moments in any Alexander Payne film where, you know, the camera work or something like that has taken me out of it. It's just, it's very competent. It's, you know, and there are moments that I feel like he's doing something interesting. Like, you know, he'll pick an interesting composition. He's not really a look at me filmmaker though. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not a Tarantino or like a Wes Anderson, certainly, or a, you know, like a Paul Thomas Anderson or something. In fact, I think I even read a quote from him once where he's saying, yeah, I know I've got Jack Nicholson in my film. I know I've got Matt Damon in this film over here. He said, if I'm doing my job, though, you're not thinking about Matt Damon or Jack Nicholson. You're thinking about the story and you're thinking about the journey of this character. And in too many movies that are made now, you're just in awe of the fact that you're looking at Jack Nicholson. And he said, I just don't want to do that. I think he's one of these filmmakers that actually, as unique a voice and as interesting a guy he is, he kind of stays out of his own way, which I think is appropriate for the kind of films that he makes. All that's to say, yeah, I mean, I think I'd probably put Citizen Ruth in the middle after this most recent viewing, maybe even upper middle, because I thought it was so great. I love how kind of pure it is in a way. It's just, it's very unencumbered.
That's right.
It puts terrific faith in his performers. He puts all of his faith in Laura Dern, and she delivers. And in terms of my favorite Alexander Payne, I love About Schmidt so much. I probably would call that my favorite film, but I would say Election is close behind. But About Schmidt is just such a masterpiece.
It's a masterpiece. That would be mine. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I did want to ask you about this, though, because and I know I wouldn't be the only one here, that I'm going to put his most recent film at the very bottom, which is Downsizing. And I'm not assuming that that's necessarily your least favorite film, but of his. But Downsizing is such an outlier that I wanted to at least get your take on what you thought about this film, because it's got some Alexander Payne elements to it. But as I was watching it, I was kind of having to search a little bit for what was Alexander Payne about it.
Yeah, man, I don't know what to do with that movie. And for those reasons, the concept, I think that's part of it. The concept seemed a little bit too high. That's not to say that he can't work with a high concept. That's not my point. But because of the high concept, then it began to lose some of what makes an Alexander Payne film so great. Mm-hmm. So for him, usually the people and the characters are the borders and the fence in which he begins to like play and roam. The concept became in some ways like the fence and the borders that he needed to live within and roam. And I just felt like, and it felt like that to me, like in some ways the people got lost in this other thing, which meant that some of those themes that I think he works so well with, you know, you mentioned earlier, I think it's right, like infidelity, betrayal, or just some sense of, who am I in this world and what am I supposed to be doing? Like those really strong questions that he's exploring almost became muted. Yeah, I mean, that's my take. It's obviously not a positive or favorable one. It's just so, it's interesting, right, to call About Schmidt, like, which I agree with. It's like a masterpiece and probably my favorite. And it's so simple and quote unquote simple. For all intents and purposes, like this highest concept with the so much possibility and promise is the least. I just think that tells you something about what his voice and where it's actually being most clearly articulated.
Yeah, Downsizing. I walked away feeling like I saw three films rather than one. I feel like any of the three films is a film that I'm actually kind of interested in an Alexander Payne take on that, but I don't know what to do with this, all three of these films being in the same film. I mean, frankly, it was pretty clearly delineated too into first, second, and third acts. Mm-hmm. The first act, you have a funny movie about people that are being shrunk down in order to live their best life, you know, to the size of whatever it is, you know, like a thimble or something. And yeah, that's the part that you deal with a little bit of the Alexander Payne greatest hits, the infidelity and the betrayal and the, you know, but you also get some chuckles along the way. And then out of nowhere, second act, it becomes this bigger statement about racial inequity. Again, I would like to see a movie by Alexander Payne about that. I mean, that sounds interesting, but it was kind of out of nowhere and it just didn't really fit. And then all of a sudden we're in a third act and we have a dystopian apocalyptic storyline. And I it just needed to pick a lane. And I felt like it never knew what lane it was in, because you had just a nugget of what could be a good movie and he just didn't really feel like pursuing any of it. So I don't know. I can't say that I hated the film, but I really didn't understand what was going on with downsizing. So
yeah, it makes me think of that, and maybe I've mentioned it on the podcast, but Flannery O'Connor has this quote, and I think she says, "Somewhere is always better than anywhere." Payne is really great at exploring the somewhere, and downsizing kind of, it's this anywhere, right? So you use the visual of picking a lane, and I think that's right. He's usually so good at picking a lane, right? And not so much in downsizing.
Yeah. I like Descendants. I don't think it was his strongest, but I thought that it hit some of the pain things. I think he hit him better in other movies, but I thought it was good. Sideways, I enjoyed quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I don't think that one has aged as well as some of his other movies. I think there's a little bit of, you know, there's a little bit of hokiness here and there, but solid film. But he let himself get a little syrupy in Sideways that he didn't in other films. But and that's why, again, I put Citizen Ruth right in the middle there. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's pure. There's really nothing about the movie I dislike. I you suggested a month ago that, you know, what about Alexander Payne? And I'm glad you did, because it was fun over the last few weeks digging into his stuff.
Yeah, it really was fun. It's a great filmmaker.
Yeah. So Alexander Payne, who I think it's clear from this conversation, I love, you seem to love. Mm-hmm. What are we going to say about Citizen Ruth? Potentially his least known film, but are we going to call this a must-see, or we think it's more of an Alexander Payne completist situation?
No, you got to see this. I mean, I would have said this even if it was in 2019. It's just undeniable, kind of going through what we've gone through. It seems so, so worth watching.
Yeah, I'm going to go so far as to call Citizen Ruth one of the best films you've never seen, kind of movies. It's just, it didn't get terrific amounts of press. You should seek out Citizen Ruth. It's just, it's too funny. It's just, it's eerily prescient of the times that we're in now, in terms of like the polarizing and all that. If you're someone who feels very strongly about this topic, even still, I would say, I would say go for it. You might find a movie that isn't necessarily just lambasting one side or the other. Now, I mean, I can kind of guess where Alexander Payne and Jim Taylor land on these issues by how the script is written, but nobody gets out clean. No matter what side of these issues, it's just not that kind of movie. And in this case, that is a good thing.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Go watch it.
Go watch it.
Well, I mean, that's all for this episode of The Freshman 15. Thanks for joining us. And, you know, wherever you might be listening to this, iTunes, Spotify, somewhere else, if you're able to give us a review, a rating, we would love that. It helps listeners find us. You can also reach us and email us. We love to receive some email or messages, interaction from you, and you might even get a shout out on the episode. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram. Our email is freshman15film@gmail.com. That's freshman15film@gmail.com. Send us a message.
And I think we mentioned last episode that we've got plenty planned for the months ahead. Of course, we're going to continue on with our episodes proper with the... I got to tell you, Daniel, we've started this season off with three really fantastic films, really three really solid directors.
Yep.
I think I'd like to continue on with solid directors, but maybe we should consider a film that's a little more questionable. I don't know. Well, we need to talk further about it. But
just one we don't like.
I don't know.
We'll see.
Let's talk more. I'm thinking that we're basking too much in the warmth of wonderful freshman films, you know, we got to have something we can make fun of a little bit along the lines. Maybe that's next month, maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, we've also got some specials coming your way. I think one or two this spring, and certainly we've got more coming this summer that we really want to do.
That's right.
Whatever the case, though, thanks so much for listening. We love your feedback, as Daniel said, but until next time, I'm Jeremy Bear.
I'm Daniel Long.
Talk to you soon.
Bye. Skip the door, I said, get out of my skip the door, I said,